And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, it's all over but the shouting, right? Looks like Biden has 306 electoral college votes, 80 million votes in total. And on the other hand, so that's a big victory. On the other hand, the Democrats had big defeats in all the states. And Trump, despite the fact that he didn't win the election, as we pointed out last week, he met his goals. He executed his strategy, and he got 10 million new voters over and above what he got the first time he ran. So, naturally, debate has struck the Democratic Party. Different factions of the party are trying to figure out what to do now. And but this week we've been consumed with, will Trump leave? Will he not leave? How will he leave? What's going on? I don't think any of that is terribly important. I think what's important is to talk about what Biden's going to take the presidency. He's going to move in. What's going to happen? And how will the Democrats and the Republicans respond? Don't you think?
Yeah, both parties are doing reviews of how they did. And I think what you started out was that except for the presidency and a couple of U.S. Senate seats, the Republicans have to be pretty happy with what they got. Now, of course, what only time will tell as to whether or not this is a one-off election or whether this bodes a trend. We've had a long-term trend of the fact that it's now, what, 7 out of 8 of the last elections or 8 out of the last 9 that the Democrat running for president since 1992 has gotten more votes than the Republican. The only exception being 2004. But it hasn't produced the will of the people being enacted into laws. And the consequence of the Trump presidency, if this is the end of Trump's political career, and we're not sure it is going to be felt down the line. First of all, of course, in the court appointments, they've essentially, the Republicans, with the aid of Mitch McConnell, have captured that third branch of government, which in many ways rules over the other two branches. It has the ability to rein in acts of the president and to examine and declare unconstitutional acts of Congress. So that's a big legacy. The other legacy is what you mentioned. Trump brought out a lot of voters. And we don't know if they're going to be one-time voters who are going to be disappointed in the fact that they voted and they didn't get the person they voted for, or that they're going to stick with things. But when they came out this time, they helped the Republicans retain control of, looks like they'll retain control of the Senate, we don't know, but retain control of a lot of state legislatures. And what that does is it, because this is a census year, when the reapportionment and redistricting occur based on the census, which of course is going to be a flawed census because Trump screwed that up purposely, they're going to retain control of a lot of state legislatures, again, over the will of the people. Places like Wisconsin and North Carolina and Pennsylvania, where more people vote for the Democrats, but the Democrats don't have control. And that also, remember, the state legislatures, in many respects, are the breeding grounds or the training grounds for higher office. People come from the state legislatures, they run for Congress. They come from the state legislatures, they run for the Senate. And those things trickle up rather than trickling down. So you get a bench of players. And the Democrats were pretty devastated after 2010, and they did not have a deep bench. And it took them a long time until 2018, really, to grow their bench. And now all of a sudden that growth has stopped. So these are the unseen consequences of the election that get kind of overshadowed by the presidential vote.
How did the Republicans do in Pennsylvania?
They did very well in many respects. For the first time in years, they captured two of the state row offices. One was for Auditor General, and one was for State Treasurer. The one they didn't capture was the Attorney General. Those are the three that were up. The state legislature, the Democrats wanted, they thought, and I was in meetings up until a week before the election, they thought, the Democrats thought that they could flip the state house. They needed 9 or 10 votes to do that. And they thought they were close to that. They were pretty sure of getting 7 to 8 and maybe getting up to 10. And lo and behold, they lost two. One of the losses happened to be the Democratic House leader, Frank Dermody, from out in Allegheny County. The interesting thing about that, of course, was that Frank Dermody originally is from Clark Summit here in Lackawanna County. And the woman that he lost to is originally from West Scranton. So you had a Lackawanna County election in Allegheny County out in Pittsburgh. But the Democrats did not do that well. They lost a couple state Senate seats as well. They thought they could pick one or two up.
What happened in Luzerne? That was important in the last election.
Yeah. You know, all the state representatives locally, they had hard-fought battles, but everybody won, all the state representatives. And the only thing that you can say is when you look at the overall vote, Luzerne County, Biden did about 4,000 votes better than Hillary did, but he still lost the county by over 20,000 votes. Now, in the old days, not that long ago, the Democrats would have won Luzerne County by over 20,000 votes easily every year. The Democratic Party in Luzerne County became tainted. It became bloated. It became a pariah down there to the average voter. And it's coming back slowly. But what we've seen is registrations change throughout the state of Pennsylvania. One time there were over 1 million more Democrats registered than Republicans. Now that number is down to under 700,000. I keep talking to Democratic politicians. I've talked to state reps. I've talked to congresspeople. I talked to the Luzerne County Democratic chair, and actually saw the Lackawanna County Democratic chair. And they'll all tell you, yes, we're working on voter registration, but nothing ever seems to come of it. Part of the problem this year was the COVID, where they couldn't go out and get people. But the Democrats were in a fantasy as well. They kept saying, well, all those changes to Republican, they were just Reagan Democrats, people who had been voting Republican for years anyway. So we didn't lose much, just the title. But, you know, as I say, the trend is your friend, and the trend is not boding well for Democrats in this area in terms of registration.
Are these Democrats saying that these new registrants are not young people? These are all old people?
They're not. They haven't seen the breakdown, and I don't know what the breakdown is. But it's hard to get young people out. I think Biden did better with young people than with older people. The thing I was seeing, and it's, I don't have a scientific basis for it, is I was seeing women getting involved in the Republicans. You know, in the House of Representatives, after 2018, the Republican members of the House of Representatives in Washington in Congress had the same number of women, 13, as they had 30 years ago. They hadn't increased it. This time they increased it, and it was women that did well for the Republicans. It was a woman who won the state race for state treasurer. And you saw this. A lot of the enthusiasm for Trump was among women.
What about sticking with Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
What about Lackawanna County? What about Harrisburg? What happened in those places?
Well, Lackawanna County and Harrisburg are two different places.
Right.
Not just geographically, but politically. Hillary won Lackawanna County by only 3,500 votes last time. Biden gained another 6,000 or so here.
So, but 10,000 votes.
Yeah, 95 to 10,000. But that is far short of what Obama got when he ran. He got well over 20,000 plurality here in Lackawanna County. So there's been a huge drop off. Now, Harrisburg went for Biden this time. Last time it was barely, and when I say barely, it was less than 100 votes that went for Hillary. This time, Biden carried it by over 12,000 votes. And I think that was a reflection of the African-American vote. There are more African-Americans down in Harrisburg area than there are in Lackawanna County. Although Lackawanna County is ethnically changing, we're getting more Hispanics, people of Asian background as well in Lackawanna County. They're going to be a force in the not-too-distant future. But the racial makeup down in Harrisburg, I think, helped Biden to a great deal. It looks like he's going to carry the state by over 60,000 votes. They're still counting a few jokes, a few things. But you know, there's something else. There were some propositions. You talked about the young vote that across the country. Legalizing certain drugs, legalizing marijuana in New Jersey. Oregon legalized not just marijuana, but heroin and some of the other drugs, some of the harder drugs. And that I think, is a reflection of the young vote, certainly not the the older, more conservative vote.
It's also a reflection of the libertarian vote.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And libertarian economics and libertarian politics, I think, played a big part in this, particularly when you're dealing with the epidemic, the pandemic of COVID. We keep seeing that split, that people, and Trump played this and played it hard, open up the states, send kids to school, open up the businesses, freedom. Michigan was maybe the most extreme example where they these gun-toting, freedom-loving so-called men with beards, almost all of them, decided that they were going to allegedly kidnap the governor. Now what we're hearing is that it was a larger plot. Not only were they going to capture her and put her on trial, but execute her on live streaming. But now we hear that they intended to do more, that they were going to lock the Capitol up, either set it on fire or start executing people in the Capitol in a suicide-type pact to express their extremism. And that's one of the problems, is we have this extreme idea of freedom that people say we're allowed to do anything we want to do. The other side of the coin is, no, you don't have the freedom. All of our freedoms are limited to some extent. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You can't own bazookas, even though there's a Second Amendment. And the other thing is that you can't, you don't have the freedom to infect other people. But they're all self-centered, just like Trump. And they don't see
that.
Why
don't you have the freedom to infect other people?
Because other people have the freedom not to be infected. That's basically it. You're talking about maybe the irresistible force versus the immovable object, but you have to, that's what government is about. Government is about choosing sides, making choices, and picking a side as to which way we want things to do. And it's done by representation. It's not done by fiat. It's not done by the will of the king or the sovereign or the dictator or the demagogue. That there's a process, and you elect representatives to do this. And if you don't like what they're doing, your remedy is to throw them out of office and change the laws. It's not to ignore the laws.
But the point is that the people who voted for Trump, they don't believe that. They believe in authoritarianism.
Yeah, I'm writing an article about Trump's communication strategies. I wrote one after he won 4 years ago, and I'm writing, this is sort of the bookend to it. And there hasn't been a great change. We've learned most the same things, particularly about his ability to repeat, to use phrases and buzzwords and things like that. But the one thing I'm ending my article with is that we've learned that authoritarianism or demagoguery has a constituency, and it's a huge constituency. People are willing to give things up. I'm currently starting a book. It's called Demagogue for President by a professor from down at Texas A&M. It's about the rhetorical genius of Donald Trump. But what it's really about is the psychology of how people are influenced by rhetoric, by communication, by messaging. And those things are we overlook at our peril. The other thing, you know, lesson that we really have to worry about is what's happened to the Republican Party and all these people that know better who refuse to stand up to Trump. Ann Applebaum talked about the people who, the enablers of people, just like we had 80 years ago in Germany. That is really what's worrisome. I heard Senator Coons from Delaware. I believe he took over Joe Biden's seat in Congress, in the Senate. But he said that he gets calls from his Republican colleagues saying, "Tell Joe that, you know, we want to congratulate him, but we can't say so in public." I mean, that's your job, to say what you believe in public and to say things that are consistent with the Constitution and our norms. And the fact of the matter is that they're willing to abrogate their responsibility so easily is maybe the most disturbing thing about what we've seen over the last few years and what we see going forward.
And I know that I don't want to downplay the significance of proper messaging and learning how to talk to people and learning how to convince people. That's important. But let's face it, if the conditions aren't ripe, you can talk yourself blue in the face and you won't convince anyone. The reason workers, working class people, and people with precarious incomes generally, the reason that they're open to hearing and accepting authoritarian ideas is because basically since the 1970s, working class people in this country have had stagnant incomes and have had stagnant life opportunities. And by the time it got to 2008 and we had the crash of 2008, so many people lost their homes, so many people lost their jobs, and nobody recovered. Well, nobody. Individuals may have recovered, but who really recovered, who really got the help, were the 1% and the banks, the financial interests, the corporations. So now comes a guy like Trump, and he says, listen, the Democrats helped these fellas, these bankers, get bailed out and didn't bail you out. The hell with them. Your problem. I alone can solve your problem. And they go along with them.
And what do you have to lose?
You already lost everything.
Right.
And yeah. Biden comes along and he says, we have to have unity. And Trump says to the workers, why do you want to be unified with the people he wants you to unify with? Fuck them. And he says it just that way. And people say, oh, yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Good for you. So there's a real crisis that the Democrats have because they don't renounce the corporate establishment that most working people say, even if they don't quite grasp it, but they feel, this is my enemy. How can I be united with this person? That's a fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't come up with a message that can overcome people's living experience.
Well, that's it, except for the fact that what Trump offers is a charade.
Oh, it's a lie. There's no question about it. It's a lie.
It's a charade because, remember, He gave the first thing, the one big bill that he ever got through Congress was the tax cut bill.
Yeah, which only gave a tax cut to the rich.
Well, he gave a small tax cut to the people, but then he went down to Mar-a-Lago and said, hey, folks, you should love me. I just gave you guys a big tax break, 40% in some instances. The little guy didn't get 40%. And as I noted a couple of weeks ago, what's going to happen is that tax cut is going to go away for the little guy because it built into the fact that they wanted to get the loss to the Treasury of $1 trillion down below $1 trillion. They take away the tax cut for the little guy starting in a couple of years. I think starting in 2021 and ending in 2027, when the whole tax cut that they gave the little guy will disappear. And of course, Biden is going to be the president. They're going to look, see, Biden, Biden took your tax cut away. No, it was the Republicans that took it away. But the Democrats are going to have to point this out.
What the Democrats are going to have to do is to produce good paying jobs. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to and you can't do that in the absence of two things. You have to have an industrialization policy that emphasizes jobs, not profits, and you have to give unions the ability to organize, because that is the only way that working class people get higher pay. The government doesn't give it to you; you get it on the job.
Well, there are certain laws and policies that you can enact that help. First of all, you can raise the minimum wage.
You could, but it hasn't happened in what, 30 years?
Well, effectively, no, it hasn't happened in 30 years.
Yeah.
That was one of Biden's pledges. And what's going to happen is McConnell's going to block it, and then they're going to blame Biden for not getting it through,
exactly.
Not keeping his promise.
But you could get it through if you had a union, because you wouldn't need to depend on the law. You just tell your employers or you tell the industry, we're not working unless this is the wage.
Well, that's where the Democrats lost out in the state legislatures, places like Ohio and Wisconsin, where they undermined union protections. They passed right to work laws, in some cases directly opposite of what they pledged to do during the campaigns, when they said we're not going to put right to work laws. You know, Wisconsin was the center of progressive economics for years and years and years, going back to Bob La Follette. And now it's one of the more conservative states economically because...
Well, Wisconsin was also Joe McCarthy's state. You know, Wisconsin bounces around.
Yeah. Yeah. But, they had their choice between a Russ Feingold and a Ron Johnson, and they took Ron Johnson twice. And he's just a tool of things. And now we're going to be facing other problems with and government actions with the COVID epidemic, which is spiking like crazy right now, just as Dr. Fauci and the real epidemiologists predicted. We're looking at other shutdowns, and that's going to help tank the economy. And the only way you get around that is to pass massive stimulus packaging. And we know that Mitch McConnell, if the Republicans retain control of the Senate, is going to stifle a lot of those bills. He's going to pass something, but it's not going to be anywhere near what's needed. It's going to be nowhere near what's needed, and he's certainly going to not going to go along with taxing the 1%. As Joe Biden said, he's going to raise taxes on people making over $400,000 a year.
Yeah, but he's not going to raise taxes on anybody because he's not going to have the legislative authority to do it.
Well, you know, at some point he's going to have to.
And by the way, even if he got the two votes in Georgia, even if those, even if the Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff win their elections, you got Joe Manchin, who's going to vote for a lot of Republicans' proposals and vote against the Democrats, even though nominally he's a Democrat. And you've got other senators on the Democratic side, two or three, who would vote against the Democratic proposals. Because basically, these guys are Republicans in Democratic clothing.
Well, they're the old, more conservative Democrats. Now, Joe Manchin is a working class guy. I think on economics, he's going to be doing things that are
yeah, but Joe Manchin is a coal industry guy. And you're not going to have a jobs program that is divorced from the Green New Deal, that is divorced from prioritizing solar and wind, that kind of stuff, and putting an end to coal, which is a killer. Let's face it, coal is a killer. Looking for coal jobs is getting paid to shoot yourself.
Yeah, well, the coal jobs are going away.
No, but Manchin is in West Virginia, controlled by whatever coal interests are left in this country.
Well, we saw that Robert Murray or whatever his name is,
Murray, yeah.
passed away a couple weeks ago. Right. He had lung conditions.
Right, exactly.
Talk about karma. Yeah. But anyway, we're just going to have to see. The one thing about the economic plans is you don't need to get around a filibuster. That can be done by reconciliation, which is what the Republicans did under Trump. We're going to have to see. I think the economic problems are going to be so great that there's going to be pressure to do something. But again, whether it's going to be enough, we just don't know.
Well, now you're getting to it. In other words, is politics just elections, or is politics the creation of public opinion through public pressure?
Yes.
Because if it's just elections, then the Trumpites are going to win more and more elections. But if it's public pressure, if it's participatory democracy, if it's people in the streets like Black Lives Matter movement fighting racism, or movements that don't now exist fighting for jobs, for economic justice, climate change threatens human life, and we have to have a mass movement to demand that pollution stop. That doesn't exist in this country at this moment yet.
Well, it's starting to break through in places where you have flooding and where you have fires.
The climate is changing in these places, but there's no movement. There's no movement. I mean, it's true. Biden is saying that he's going to make climate change the centerpiece of everything he tries to do. But unless there's a mass movement that engages people's interest and their understanding and their sympathies, it's not going to triumph. The legislative effort will not triumph. It won't have the support. You've got to change public opinion. You've got to make people understand that they're going to die. Their children are going to die. Their grandchildren are not going to get born.
Well, but that gets back to how you communicate and message to them.
Yeah.
And we know that there's a lot of money on the other side, although I did see a quote from Charles Koch this week, who he said he made a mistake in not being bipartisan enough.
That's interesting. I don't know what he means by that, since he doesn't believe in elections.
Yeah. He didn't buy off enough Democrats. He just bought off enough Republicans or Libertarians.
But you see, within the Democrats, we haven't talked about this, and we don't have time to talk about this, but I want to talk about it next week. There's a discussion now in the Democratic Party of how they should react to this election, as there is always a discussion. And we have and the point is, you have Trumpism not defeated, Trump defeated, but not Trumpism. How do you counter that? That's the real political question. I want to talk about that next week. This week, we're done.
This week, we're done. Stay safe.
Stay safe.
And stay safe, and we'll see you next week.
And we'll see you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.